Hi everyone, welcome to Al-Muqaddimah, my name is Siavish. As you might know, Islam originated in Arabia and quickly expanded into the rest of the Middle East. However, today, 1400 years after the Prophet, the country with the largest number of Muslims isn't even in the Middle East. It's on the very edge of the Islamic world, all the way in Southeast Asia. Indonesia is the country with the largest number of Muslims in it, followed closely by Pakistan. Indonesia, along with Malaysia and Brunei, makes up a unique pocket of Indianized Islamic civilization. So, how did these three countries become Muslim? This video is sponsored by Magellan TV. Magellan TV is a streaming service that hosts over 3,000 documentaries and shows in various genres, from history to science, as well as travel and art. They're adding new shows all the time, which you can enjoy on all sorts of devices. Also, best of all, there are no ads, and an increasing percentage of shows is available in 4K with no additional cost. They were kind enough to offer Al-Muqaddimah viewers an extended free month-long trial. You can go to try.magellantv.com/Al-Muqaddimah to take advantage of that. Since you're watching a history channel, you might also like many historical documentaries that they have. I would recommend History of Fine Fashion, mostly because cotton and silk were two of the biggest items traded on the Silk Road and are relevant to today's video. For science fans out there, I'd recommend Jimal Khalili's Guide to Life, the Universe, and Everything. It's a wonderful three-part series on the origins of the universe and life. Plus, the visuals are really cool. Again, you can get a free month-long trial to enjoy these documentaries. Back to the video. The periphery of the Islamic world, with Western Sub-Saharan Africa on one side and Southeast Asia on the other, was way too far from the Islamic heartland in the Middle East for military conquests. So these regions were brought into the abode of Islam not by an army, but rather by merchants. Since trade is so important to this story, let's first talk about that. As far back as antiquity, trade existed between China, India, Middle East, and Europe. This trade took two routes, one over land, which is commonly known as the Silk Road, and one by sea through the Indian Ocean. This route went from the Red Sea, hugging the coast of India, through the Malay Archipelago, all the way to China. It relied on seasonal winds, known as the monsoon. A round trip from the Red Sea to China took 3 years, since sailors often had to wait for favorable wind to blow. As sailors often waited in port cities along the way, it resulted in a network of cities being formed along the route, with significant communities of sailors from different regions. After the arrival of Islam, this route was dominated by Muslim Arabs. Hence, large numbers of Muslim Arabs settled down in vital ports along the route, all around the Indian Ocean, including the Malay Archipelago and China. Guangzhou, also known as Canton, had a large number of permanent Muslim settlers who even married local women and eventually created the Chinese Muslim community known as the Hui. Though this interaction between the Muslims and the Chinese wasn't always peaceful. In 879, the Chinese massacred and expelled the foreigners living in Guangzhou, including the Muslims. These Muslims moved up the trade route to Southeast Asia. A large number of them settled down in the Sriwijaya Empire, which was a Buddhist empire on the island of Sumatra in what is today Indonesia. The Malay Archipelago was a patchwork of small Hindu and Buddhist empires. From the late 9th century to the mid-14th century, we find some evidence of a small number of Muslims scattered across the archipelago. They were found in the trade business as well as in the royal courts. Islam was so well established in the region by the 14th century that there's evidence that some members of the Majapahit ruling dynasty, which was a Hindu-Buddhist dynasty, even converted to Islam. In the 1360s and the 1370s, Muslims were expelled once again from China. This time it wasn't just the merchants, but rather government officials as well. The Yuan dynasty, which was a Mongol successor dynasty, had employed large numbers of Muslims in powerful positions. After their decline, the Ming Dynasty expelled these Muslims and replaced them with Chinese officials. They, like the Muslims before them, moved to the Malay archipelago as well, opening the door to Muslim political presence there. The 14th century saw many Islamic polities take shape in Southeast Asia. Perhaps the first was the Sultanate of Brunei, founded around the 1360s. I'm saying perhaps because there's dispute about the date it was founded on. However, the most important Muslim polity founded around the time was the Malacca Sultanate, where the last Raja of Singapore, Parameshwar, founded the city of Malacca and converted to Islam around 1400 CE. Malacca quickly joined the list of vital ports of the trade route. Other than Malacca, Muslims could be found ruling cities all over the archipelago. They ruled much of Sulu, Maluku, and most cities along the coast of Java and the Strait of Malacca. A lot of these cities didn't produce anything themselves. They were basically middlemen in two trades. First, they simply bought goods from ships coming from China and put them on ships headed for Arabia. Second, they bought spices from the interior of the islands, which were often ruled by different empires, which in most cases weren't Muslim. These spices were practically worth their weight in gold to Europeans who had gotten a taste for them after the Crusades. Over in Europe, the Venetians held a virtual monopoly over spice trade. They bought them from Muslim Middle East and sold them to Europeans. Many European monarchs were starting to get irritated by the fact that Venice, whom they called the Turk's harlot, set whatever prices they wanted. This, mixed with the conquest of Constantinople in 1453, led to an increased desire to bypass the Middle East and the Venetians entirely. In 1498, Vasco da Gama went around the African continent and landed in India, providing a way to do just that. They saw the potential in trying to control the spice trade, so they started expanding. The Malacca Strait was the most important point in this trade because practically all spice flowed through here. So in 1511, the Portuguese invaded with 19 gunships and took over. They also took other vital points on the trade route, such as Goa, the coast of Kerala, and the Strait of Hormuz. They were able to do this due to a lack of central authority that governed and protected the trade route. The closest thing to it that had ever happened was Zheng He, a Chinese Muslim admiral who led an armada of 60 ships along the route to secure it and make trade deals. Though in 1431, the Chinese emperor gutted his navy because there wasn't a threat to China in the Indian Ocean. The Portuguese were initially very successful and were even able to divert a third of the trade around the Cape of Good Hope within a few decades. But in this entire ordeal, they made two mistakes. The first was that they overestimated the value of Malacca. Malacca was, of course, the most important choke point for the trade, but others could be propped up, and that's exactly what happened. Merchants abandoned Malacca and moved to Sulu, Brunei, and Sumatra. These merchants, once again, were Muslims. The second mistake of the Portuguese was pushing Catholicism on the locals. Having just pushed Muslims off the Iberian Peninsula, the Portuguese saw themselves as crusaders against Islam and wanted to end it everywhere they went, including Western and Eastern Africa, as well as Southeast Asia. Ironically, this led to an increased Islamization of Southeast Asia. Muslim cities on the coasts were the leaders in resistance against the increasingly brutal Portuguese dominance. Many joined the struggle and converted to Islam in the process. Converting to Islam allowed them to connect to a wider Islamic world from which they could draw help against the Europeans. Some help did come from other Muslims, such as the Ottomans and the Golconda Sultanate of India, but overall it wasn't enough. The Portuguese themselves made it look like this was a war between an international alliance of Christians and an international alliance of Muslims. The Muslim merchants who left Malacca provided support to other Muslim cities. As a result, in the 16th century, we saw the rise of many powerful sultanates on various islands, including the Sultanate of Aceh and Mataram Sultanate. Due to local resistance, intervention by other European powers, and more lucrative opportunities in Brazil, the Portuguese more or less left Southeast Asia by the year 1600. Their place was taken by the Spanish. The Spanish, like the Portuguese, were obsessed with converting the region, and they were a bit more successful than their predecessors. In 1571, they destroyed the Manila Sultanate in what is today the Philippines and conquered it. They christened the islands as Philippines in the honor of King Philip II. It is probably because of Spain that the Philippines is not Muslim today. Their success invited other European powers to the region, namely the Dutch, who first arrived in Banten in 1596. By 1602, they formed a company called the United East India Company, or VOC, and started waging war to take over the spice trade. The Dutch, unlike the Spanish and the Portuguese, weren't at all interested in converting Muslims, though they were pissed off at the Portuguese and so expelled their missionaries and replaced them with their own. They conquered Maluku in 1605 and Jakarta in 1619, which became their headquarters. They renamed it Batavia. Another arrival on the scene was the British East India Company, which wasn't initially as successful in the region as the Dutch. However, together, they did something that had never been done before. Thanks to them, by 1620, Constantinople had to import spices from Western Europe. By the year 1700, most people in the Malay archipelago were either Muslim or Christian. Hinduism and Buddhism were the only religions to have declined, though even they flourished on some islands, such as Bali, which is still predominantly Hindu. So now let's talk about how the conversion to Islam happened. When Muslims first arrived in Southeast Asia, the dominant religions were Buddhism and Hinduism. The area was fully Sanskritized in that they followed many practices found on the Indian subcontinent. The arrival of Muslims changed the demographics in the richer coastal cities, but the countryside was unchanged. These richer cities had Sharia courts and madrasas. Sometimes the rulers of these cities waged war against the countryside, bringing some area into their control as well. In addition to that, the clergy at the madrasas went out and preached Islam before the arrival of the Europeans, though they weren't very successful. Mainly because the nature of Hinduism or Buddhism was much different than Islam. For example, even after conversion, many new Muslims continued to drink alcohol, marry non-Muslims, and some even burned their dead, though this last one was quickly replaced by simply venerating and praying for the dead. This is, of course, generalization because the peoples of the islands were very diverse and followed very different practices. The brutality of the Dutch and the Portuguese was a big factor in pushing people toward Islam. As the Europeans replaced the Muslim elites, they moved to the countryside and interacted with the farming communities. The Europeans taxed them to a cruel degree and forced them to grow cash crops to the point that there were food shortages. When the Dutch declared monopoly over nutmeg, they went out and burned fields all over Southeast Asia and massacred the locals who resisted. So the farmers sided with the displaced Muslim elites and slowly converted to their religion, slowly creating the country with the largest Muslim population in the world. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.